Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Sandra Astis-Dave, and today I'll be reading from the June 29th, 2024 issue of The Economist magazine. We'll begin as usual with the World This Week politics. A disgruntled general led an attempted coup in Bolivia. Troops aligned with the General Juan José Zuniga stormed the presidential palace in La Paz, the capital, before pulling away as momentum slipped. Some Bolivians also took to the streets to condemn the coup attempt. Luis Arce, the president, called for international support. General Zuniga had been sacked recently after he said he would stop Evo Morales, a former left president, from running for office again in the next election. Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was president of Honduras from 2014 to 2022, was sentenced to 45 years in prison by a judge in Manhattan for enabling the transport of cocaine to the United States. Mr. Hernandez took millions of dollars in bribes, telling friends that he would stuff cocaine right up its noses of the gringos. The first contingent of peacekeepers in Peña arrived in Haiti. Peacekeeping force had been delayed by the Kenyan government hesitating over its deployment. Observers wonder whether the mission, which will include troops from other countries, will be able to rein in Haiti's brutal gang warlords. One of those warlords, Germain Jolly, was sentenced to 35 years in prison by a court in Washington, D.C., after pleading guilty to charges of trafficking arms and laundering ransom payments. In Canada, Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party suffered a shock defeat in a by-election in the parliamentary seat in Toronto, a city that Liberals dominate. The Conservatives narrowly won the seat which the Liberals had held since 1993. The result has raised questions about how long Mr. Trudeau can remain prime minister. Moderate Democrats ousted a left-wing congressman in primary election in New York. Jamal Bowman, one of the Congress's progressive squad, was defeated by George Latimer in a race that turned on Mr. Bowman's outspoken criticism of Israel. It was the most expensive Democratic congressional primary ever. The American-Israeli Prime Affairs Committee spent nearly $15 million on ads opposing Mr. Bowman. Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, struck a deal with American prosecutors, pleading guilty on one charge of breaking the Espionage Act. In 2010, WikiLeaks released hundreds of classified documents containing offensive information about operations in Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere. Mr. Assange spent 5 years in a British prison. As his extradition case trundled on, he was flown to the Northern Mariana Islands, an American territory, where he pleaded guilty to charges before being allowed to return to his native Australia. Israel's Supreme Court ruled that ultra-Orthodox religious students must serve in the armed forces, overturning an exemption that traced its roots back to the founding of Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, was trying to find an incremental solution to the issue, in part to appease the two ultra-Orthodox parties in his coalition. They are furious with the ruling. Around 500,000 people in Gaza face catastrophic levels of acute food insecurity, including starvation, according to the IPC, an international body that works with GNOs. Almost the whole population faces problems securing food. At least 13 people died in Nairobi, Kenya's capital, protesting against a raft of new taxes on everyday items, including bread. After the demonstrations were met with rubber bullets, tear gas, and deadly force, the protesters set fire to the parliamentary building, governor's office, and city hall. William Ruto, the president, promptly withdrew the taxes. Namibia's High Court struck down colonial-era laws that criminalize gay sex between men. The judges ruled that the law banning sodomy and unnatural sex between men was discriminatory. There are no laws prohibiting sex between women. The judges is a rare victory for gay rights, which is being rolled back in several parts of Africa. Islamist extremists attacked churches and synagogues in the Russian Republic of Dagestan, where 80% of the population is Muslim. At least 21 people were killed, including a priest. Most of the dead were police officers. Last October, a mob rampaged through Dagestan's airport in an attempt to kill Jews on a flight from Israel. In a highly symbolic move, Ukraine and Moldova began formal talks with the European Union to accede to the bloc. The initial negotiations allows the EU to present both countries with a framework for the reforms that are necessary to gain entry. A final decision is probably years away. Separately, Mark Rutte, the outgoing Dutch Prime Minister, was confirmed as the next Secretary General of NATO. Vladimir Zelensky removed Lieutenant General Yuri Sotal as commander of the Ukrainian Army's joint forces. Hours earlier, the chief of staff of the Azov National Guard Brigade accused General Sotal of incompetence, claiming he was responsible for the death of more Ukrainian soldiers than Russia. The International Criminal Court in The Hague issued arrest warrants for Sergei Shoigu, Russia's defense minister until last month, and Valery Gerasimov, the senior commander of Russian troops in Ukraine. The ICC said there were reasonable grounds to believe that the pair ordered attacks on Ukrainian energy infrastructure and that the consequential harm to civilians was clearly excessive by any military objective. Evan Gershowitz went on trial in Russia. The journalist from the Wall Street Journal is accused of espionage, a claim rejected by America. Russia has suggested it will exchange Mr. Gershowitz in a prisoner swap with America. Arvind Kejriwal, the chief minister of Delhi and a prominent Indian opposition figure, was arrested by one of India's main anti-corruption bodies. He was already being detained on related charges brought by another corruption agency. The new arrest came hours before the Supreme Court was due to hear Mr. Kejriwal's plea for bail, which he will refile. Mr. Kejriwal insists the charges are politically motivated. Om Birla was elected Speaker of India's Parliament as the opposition forced its first contest for the job since 1976. Mr. Birla comes from the BJP party, which lost its overall majority at the recent general election. Ural Gandhi from the Congress Party was elected as official leader of the opposition, a constitutional position that has been vacant for a decade. And now to business. The Federal Reserve released the results of its annual stress tests, which assess how banks would cope with a severe global recession and meltdown in the property market. All 31 of the banks, including Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo, passed the Fed's baseline scenario, meeting their minimum capital ratios, though the aggregate ratio, a cushion against losses, fell from 12.7% to 9.9%. The banks' combined hypothetical losses reached $685 billion. Lufthansa announced that it would bypass on the cost of complying with new emissions regulations to passengers. The German airline will introduce an environmental cost surcharge of between £1 and £72 on flights that depart from the EU, Britain, Norway, and Switzerland after December 31st. Lufthansa said this was to help to cover a European ruling ensuring that at least 2% of airline fuel consumption comes from more expensive sustainable aviation fuel as well as green tape. Airbus share price plunged by 10% after it slashed its profit forecast because of supply chain problems that have left it with a shortage of aircraft engines. It is now aiming to deliver 770 commercial planes this year, down from a previous estimate of 800. The European Commission accused Microsoft of breaching antitrust rules by tying its Teams communication product office into its office software. The Commission says Microsoft did not offer customers a choice of whether they wanted Teams. The accusation formed part of the preliminary response to a complaint lodged by Slack. Microsoft has already taken steps to tackle some of the issues and said it would try to answer the Commission's remaining concerns. In another preliminary finding, the Commission accused Apple of preventing apps developers from steering consumers towards alternative channels for its App Store. Apple responded that it had made a number of changes to comply with the EU's new Digital Markets Act. The company is postponing the rollout in the EU of new artificial intelligence features for the iPhone because of uncertainties in competition rules. NVIDIA's stint as the world's most valuable company didn't last long. The chipmaker's share fell over several days, wiping hundreds of billions of dollars off the market value. At one point, the stock was down 13% from its peak. The decline may have been caused by investors cashing in on gains of the stock's extraordinarily recent rise. News that Jens Hong, NVIDIA's chief executive, sold a tranche of his shares may have been contributing to the sell-off. Enthusiasm for the stock was soon rekindled, and the stock climbed again in subsequent trading. Argentina fell into recession again. The economy shrank by 2.6% in the first quarter over the previous 3 months. On a year-by-year basis, GDP was 5.1% smaller. The unemployment rate surged to 7.7%. Volkswagen created a joint venture with Rivian and will invest $5 billion in the maker of electronic vehicles. Rivian, best known for supplying Amazon with delivery vans, will share its technical expertise and software with VW, which faces a big challenge in Europe from cheaper Chinese EV exports. The deal is a potential lifeline for Rivian, which reported a net loss of $1.4 billion for the first 3 months of the year. New York has the most traffic congestion of any city in the world, according to a survey by INRAX, the data analytics firm. New Yorkers spent 101 hours stuck in traffic last year, though London, Paris, Mexico City, and Chicago were not far behind in terms of time wasted. New York's plan to introduce a congestion charge was recently put on hold by New York State's governor. INRIX calculates that vehicles in downtown Manhattan crawled along at a speed of 11 miles an hour during peak morning periods. After several setbacks, the robotaxi industry took a big step forward as Waymo opened its service in San Francisco to everyone following trials of limited numbers of passengers. The city is only the second in America. Phoenix is the other, where Waymo's self-driving fleet is available to all. Some 300,000 San Franciscans have signed up. Chapel Down, Britain's biggest winemaker, said it was considering a sale of the business as one option to fund its long-term growth. Known for its sparkling wine, the company listed in Britain's AIM stock market in December. A warming climate has helped Britain's vineyards. The yields in 2023 were the highest ever. GB Wine estimates that production rose from 5.3 million bottles in 2017 to 20 million to 22 million in 2023, still a drop in the barrel compared with France's 7 billion to 8 billion bottles. The center cannot hold. Emmanuel Macron has done well by France. As the country goes to the polls, he risks losing it all. But for snap elections on June 30th, this could have been a time in Paris to celebrate. Seldom has the City of Light sparkled so brightly. In a month, Paris, France's capital, will welcome the world to the 33rd Olympiad. Brand new train lines will ferry athletes to gleaming new venues, carving through a place that has rediscovered its vibrancy. Once in danger of becoming a backwater with some good museums but dated cuisine and a lot of graffiti, Paris is now the hub for tech companies and a banking center that is starting to rival London as it draws talents and capital across the channel. Fusion food, bike lanes, international lessee, startup spaces, pop-up fashion. Paris is cool again, and not just Paris. Urban renewal, given a good mix of public investment and private enterprise, is sprouting in Lyon, Dijon, and even once grimy Lille. Much of the credit belongs to Emmanuel Macron. His 7 years as president has been a sustained effort to remake France as a modern business-friendly economy. He has reformed employment to encourage bosses to take on workers. Since he moved from the Elysee in 2017, 2 million jobs have been created and over 6 million businesses set up. He has cut business taxes along with stifling wealth taxes. He has boosted education and started to reform the unaffordable pension system. France's growth is above the Eurozone average and poverty rates below it. You would think voters would reward this record. Instead, Mr. Macron's ensemble alliance is headed for humiliation on June 30th. One analyst puts the chance of forming a majority at 0%. As a result, Mr. Macron's reforms could soon begin to unravel, and that reflects a problem for centrist incumbents everywhere. It was described best by Jean-Claude Juncker, former Prime Minister of Luxembourg and President of the European Commission. We all know what to do, but we don't know how to get reelected once we've done it. One reason for the backlash against Mr. Macron is his own rash decision to call a snap parliamentary election for Sunday. That is 3 years earlier than he needed to, and just 3 weeks after the hard-right opposition national rally of Marine Le Pen walloped him in the European elections, normally seen only as a protest vote. Remarkably, his move has also united the fractious left-wing opposition, which runs from the traditional socialist center-left to the loopily radical, unsubmissive left-right, a left-wing alliance known as the New Popular Front, polling first and second, respectively. In the two-round contest, many of Mr. Macron's candidates are likely to be squeezed out of the race after the first round. But poor timing cannot explain the central fact of this election. In spite of the benefits Mr. Macron's reforms have brought, French voters want to dismantle them. National rally is set on reversing pension reform and restoring the wealth tax, and promises to slash VAT on energy bills and fuel. It also vows to crack down on migration, deport Islamists, ban the veil in public places, and reintroduce border control with other European Union countries. None of this chimes with the open climate for investment Mr. Macron has created. Fiscal rigor has not been Mr. Macron's strong suit. France is running 5% annual budget deficit and sitting on public debt worth some 110% of GDP. All the more reason to believe that the extra spending promised by the hard right would do serious damage to the economy. The hard left new public front is likely to win power, but its reform would be even more harmful. The most likely outcome, a hung parliament, will probably lead to reform slipping backward. The rules mean the fresh elections cannot be called for at least a year, and in that time France could have no government, no legislation, and perhaps no new budget. Mr. Macron will remain president. His term does not end until 2017, at which point Ms. Le Pen aims to succeed him. Although he has extensive executive powers in defense and foreign policy, he has limited ones on domestic policy, which is to preserve the government, account to Parliament. He may try to impose a technocratic government, but Parliament could simply vote it out again. Reform needs constant pressure, but that would dissipate instantly. The damage at home is likely to be exacerbated by the damage to Europe. The EU has seldom been so rudderless. Germany's ruling coalition is at a breaking point. All three of its parties beaten at the Euro elections by the far-right Alternative for Germany, which was in alliance with Ms. Le Pen until it got too ripe even for her. Olaf Scholz, the chancellor, has proved incapable of exercising leadership in Europe, even on a good day, and there have not been many of these. The snag list is huge. Russia, EU expansion to stabilize the Balkans and underwrite Ukraine, keeping climate change policies on track, migration. Nothing works in the EU unless it's driven by the Franco-German motor, but one of its cylinders is kaput and the other is fortuit. How has a president like Mr. Macron, who has brought this country the fruits of reform, arrived at such a pass? In part, it is because Mr. Juncker is right. It is customary to sneer at politicians, but being able to persuade voters to change, to painful change, is worth it is misunderstood and hugely underrated virtue. In part, it is because while Paris and other big cities have thrived, much of France has not. Perception and of inequality are driving politics to the hard right in much of the democratic world. Mr. Macron has also fallen into trap, some of his own making. The legacies of COVID-19 and inflation make this a rotten time to face voters. One reason Mr. Macron struggled to deal with them better is that he chose to construct an Olympian presidency. He believed that the power of the office could unite the country, but instead he is seen as arrogant and out of touch. His other mistake was to leave no opposition in the center ground. An axiom of democratic politics is that voters grow tired of incumbents. When they do, they will turn to the alternative. In France, as elsewhere, that alternative could do great harm. Joe Biden's missing agenda. What to make of the president's plans for a second term? Some politicians are shy about revealing their ideas before elections for fear of alarming the voters. Others simply do not have very much to say. Which type is Joe Biden in his pitches for a second presidential term? His domestic policy plans have received much less scrutiny than Donald Trump's. Our briefing this week is an attempt to make up for that. The most positive thing to say about the president's platform is that the alternative is a lot worse. Mr. Biden came to power in 2021 with grand vision to remake America's economy for the middle class. His foreign policy was organized around that goal, too. FDR was mentioned. In office, he was constrained by the Senate, without the votes to overcome the filibuster, Bidenomics had to be implemented through giant budget bills and regulations. Some of the results have been beneficial, particularly in spurring investment in green technology. But overall, Mr. Biden has placed far too much faith in regulation, protection, and intervention rather than animal spirits to boost up the economy. A second term would be more timid. Team Biden talks of creating universal preschool and other big reforms, but will surely achieve far less. On tax, trade, and anti-trade ideas are a mix of promises and retrograde, reflecting compromises to placate the party's coalition. What it lacks in realistic appraisal of how the economy is doing or a vision of where America could be in 10 years. On fiscal policy, Team Biden would like to restore the top marginal rate of the income tax to 39%, where it was before Trump era cuts reduced it to 37%. Given the budget deficits, this makes sense. The president's team would like to eliminate the stepped-up basis loophole for capital gains tax, which is a good idea too. But Mr. Biden is committed to sparing those earning less than $400,000 a year from any new taxes, a sop to the left populace who think that the super rich can fund all their spending plans. On antitrust, the administration has pursued useful cases against Fed healthcare and credit card firms. But the head of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan, has wasted energy on the Quixotic mission to restrain big tech firms, despite evidence that competition between them is fierce. On trade, the Biden administration has been marginally better than its predecessor. The president has lowered barriers on European and European steel and aluminum. The trade initiative in Asia, IPEF, makes the right noises but has not amounted to much. When it comes to trade with China, alas, Bidenomics has often been more competent version of Trumpism. Biden policy algorithm do not get outflanked by Donald Trump on China or trade. Do not give rise to taxes to anyone without a yacht. Do not do anything to annoy unions or to worsen racial disparities. The result is in a defensive crouch. For example, Team Biden wants to decarbonize the economy, but not look soft on China or unfriendly to unions, so it places tariffs on imports of Chinese electric vehicles and solar panels, slowly decarbonization without doing much to create union jobs. That's all we have time for today. I've been reading from The Economist magazine dated July 29th, 2024. I'm Sandra Astor-Stave. So long until next time.